even like growing up, I just felt like being Indian was the hardest thing, especially in Wisconsin, not having much diversity. I felt like I was always the odd one out, or I wasn't beautiful enough because, you know, maybe the other white Eurocentric kind of beauty standards were more prominent.
Welcome to the Brown Girl Podcast. This show was created to elevate the voices and perspectives of dual identity South Asians around the world. Here we have conversations on topics and issues that impact our community, as well as share the stories of personal successes and the struggles that often go unsaid. My name is Julie George, and I'm your host.
Hey everyone, welcome back. It is Tuesday, December 20th, 2022, when this episode is being released. We have a fun episode with our guest today, Renee Carr Johnson. Renee was so fun to talk to. She currently works full-time and she is doing a part-time MBA program at the University of Chicago. She is also the founder of RKJ Designs, which is an Indo-Western fashion line. So in this episode, we talked about what it was like growing up as a half Malayali, half Bengali in a mostly white part of America. We talked about how her interest in fashion began and some of the cool events and fashion shows that she's been able to bring her collection to, including the first ever South Asian New York Fashion Week, which was held earlier this year. And on that note, we talked a lot about the topic of diversity and inclusion within the fashion world. If you guys had been following South Asian New York Fashion Week, there were models who participated that were coming out and sharing their experiences as it relates to how inclusivity did or did not play out within the show. And so we got to hear Renee's take and experience on that. And we also talked about what it means for her to create an inclusive and sustainable brand. So here's Renee.
Well, I hit recording and now we are recording.
Oh, perfect. Okay, cool. Hey, Renee, welcome to our show.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
I'm so excited to have you here today. So we have a lot of different things we're going to talk about. I know you have a lot of really fun things going on in your life that I think are super interesting and fascinating to share with the world. So let's just start off, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you live, what you do, and anything else that you want our listeners to know about you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks for the introduction, Julie. So I guess a little bit about me. Right now, I go to school at doing my MBA at the University of Chicago. I do that part-time. So I work full-time at a corporate job, which is I do product management at Visa. And on the side, hopefully one day yet to be my full-time role, is started my own fashion brand called RKJ Designs that combines Indo-Western kind of a fusion outfit to really cater and bring the importance of South Asian fashion in the everyday life. I think one of the biggest reasons why I wanted to start this was I feel like whenever we think of South Asian fashion, we always go to the langas or we think of more formal attire, which is so beautiful. But yet I feel like it misses a lot of the beauty when it comes to everyday fashion, which is kind of what I wanted to kind of strive for in my brand.
Yeah, I love that. And I definitely want to talk and hear more about your fashion business and what you're doing as a designer. But tell me a little bit about your upbringing. Where did you grow up?
Yeah, so I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin. So I actually was born in Mississippi, moved there to Madison and grew up there, did all my schooling at the University of Wisconsin-Madison too. And then after, I felt like I needed to get out of the state. I just felt like I grew up in Wisconsin, didn't really get to explore different places in America. So I moved to San Francisco. And then I spent a summer in New York this past year where I kind of like had the drive to kind of instill this company for the fashion design. You know, I feel like that city is so intoxicating and just pushing me in my boundaries more and more. And that I moved to Chicago in September. So a little background about me too. So my dad is Malu, he's from Kerala. My mom is Bengali from Calcutta. And I feel like those two cultures are so different. So growing up, I feel like I was always indulged in the idea of being fusioned for different cultures. So I felt like I was two different cultures, which I am, but it really kind of played a part in how I kind of grew up. My dad is Christian. My mom is Hindu. But they both love fish. So that was something that they have in common. But yeah. Growing up, you know, I always had this kind of inner fighting of like, Renee, who are you really? Are you Bengali? Are you Mulu? But I think my parents did a really good job at kind of bringing those connections together. Like I went to church with my family, went to a Catholic school. I also did Bharatanatyam where I learned about Hindu mythology, went to the temple with my parents. So I gotta have a strong upbringing. And like, because I practice both religions, both cultures, I don't identify as either one solely, but I identify as both.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of plays a part too in the larger spectrum, like coming to or being born and brought up in America, having that kind of fighting urge within me to be like, am I really American or am I not? And I am American, but I'm also Indian. And like growing up, figuring that battle between who I am and understanding that I don't have to pick one or the other to really showcase like who Renee is. So yeah, a little bit about my upbringing.
Yeah. So you grew up you're half Bengali and half Malayali, which is really cool. I haven't met very many half Malayalis, like at least in my generation. So that's really cool. So I'm guessing your parents had a quote love marriage.
Yeah. Okay. And it was, I think, so thankfully both my grandparents were very supportive for my parents' marriage, but I think it definitely was more of a conversation with my dad's parents when it came to religion, you know? And like you said, there's not many half Malayalis. So that was something that kind of pushed me to like, when I was growing up and I was maybe confused or feeling a little bit like I didn't belong in one of those cultures, I knew my parents kind of fought for something and I felt beautiful in a way because it was something that was unique and different. So whenever I felt like, you know, I feel like in the Indian community too, we have this kind of like, even though if we don't try it, there's always like these groups or like people who speak one language, they kind of like have their inside jokes or, you know, and that. And I didn't feel like I had kind of like a connection with either because I wasn't 100% that culture. So I was kind of lost sometimes growing up, even in the Indian community. So that was a struggle as well. But then I got to meet a lot of people who are also half of different cultures in India. And I got to kind of feel like I'm not alone in this and kind of started appreciating that more than looking at it as more of like a negative part of myself.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I remember growing up as an Indian girl, it wasn't cool to be Indian. You know, I remember growing up, there were girls that were, quote, my friends telling me that the reason other boys at school didn't like me was because I was Indian. Like, it just wasn't cool to be Indian. Yeah. And I remember in high school when it was prom season, I remember seeing and hearing about, like, these other, you know, Indian girls from other schools wearing saris to prom. And I thought at the time, oh, my God, I would never do that because I'd be so embarrassed. And now I would love to go back to prom and have worn a sari or something else that's, you know, more traditional because now I have so much pride in like who I am and my culture and my background and all of that.
No, and I love that. I think the best part of this is at least the end result is us kind of appreciating that culture. I think our generation had it where we did hate or maybe just strongly disliked being Indian. Oh my God, I had wished that I was not born Indian when I was growing up, you know, and like the terms like you said, like, well, a friend doesn't like you or the guys aren't interested because you're Indian or you're pretty for an Indian girl. Like, what does that even mean? Like, now that I look back at it, that's like so disgusting. You know what I mean? Like, that's like, it's horrible. And like, I remember talking to another one of my friends who's Black and she was saying too that she's heard that as well. And we were like kind of bonding over that because we were like, wow, we didn't realize how toxic that kind of conversation is and that mentality that we had to kind of fit the Eurocentric beauty standards. Like, even when it came to fashion, like if the American white kids were wearing Abercrombie or like they're wearing this style, I had to wear that. I felt like I needed to kind of fit in. I would never wear jhumkas ever in high school, you know, like if that was a thing for me, like I would feel so embarrassed. So even like just growing up, I just felt like being Indian was the hardest thing, and especially in Wisconsin, sometimes not having much diversity, I felt like I was always the odd one out, kind of, or I wasn't beautiful enough because, you know, maybe the other, you know, white Eurocentric kind of beauty standards were more prominent. So I was definitely felt like, you know, not fitting in and stuff. But I'm happy that right now we can kind of look back and be happy. And I feel like I'm so proud to be Indian, and I feel like culture is beautiful, and I feel like I appreciate that more because I feel like I was hiding that so much
growing up. Yeah. So, okay. So you're doing your MBA, you're working full time. So how did you get interested in fashion and designing? Like where and how did this particular interest start?
Yeah, I think in college, I was doing random sketches, and I feel like I always loved to kind of express myself through fashion. So like whether it be like, you know, buying, investing in pieces and like styling them on my own, or kind of sketching and being like, oh, this would be cool if I did that. So in college, I remember having like a book of sketches and then trying to figure out like who to go to like make it happen. And everything in America was obviously super expensive to manufacture. And I remember being like, one outfit was like $1,000. And as a college kid, oh my God, like $100 was a lot for me, you know? So like, I was like, okay, this is going to have to be something that I kind of push to the side because I just, I'm financially not there. And I don't think the passion was so strong that I wanted to kind of like fulfill like that as my full-time role. So I was like, okay, I still want to do something in marketing, but I don't think, you know, fashion is something I want to do full-time. And then after the pandemic, when I went back to San Francisco, that passion kind of came back again. And my roommate actually introduced me to two founders at Rhea Collective. So they kind of do Rent the Runway for Indian clothes, and they also style different outfits for celebrities, influencers, and also TV shows. So they styled Never Have I Ever, the mom in that show. So they do really cool events, opportunities, and I got to help them with their fashion shows. And I remember it was a fashion show in Miami where I was sitting there, and in this environment, I was like, this is the energy that I've been missing, you know, in my corporate role. Like, this is something that when I was there, I was like, this is what I want to do like every month, or, you know, I mean, I want to be in this creative space. So yeah, I asked them, I was like, hey, like I've had these designs for quite some time, really want to kind of work with a manufacturer. So they helped me, paired me up with the manufacturer, and I kind of went about with the sampling process, and got my first collection in August and took some pictures, applied to South Asian New York Fashion Week. And I felt like that really kind of elevated my my process with them, definitely. And I've been trying to grasp every opportunity, learning to say yes and no, and figuring out how to kind of balance everything.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think it's just so cool because, you know, our culture, there's just the fabrics and the designs and the techniques and the patterns, it's just so exquisite. And so it's just really cool to see these new and up and coming designers like yourself that fuse that East and the West. But it's like special because it's actually coming from Indian or South Asian designers who have actual cultural roots that tie that together, as opposed to seeing it at, you know, somewhere else, like from H&M or something like that.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that every article of clothing tells a story. And I think that because of the fast fashion trend, we kind of lose the idea of the artistic kind of like mindset behind clothes. And I think that's what I want to give with my pieces too. I don't want it to be something where I would rather a customer not buy my outfit because it's too expensive than them buying a bunch of stuff in their car. Like, I want my customers to have a reason to buy this, or like have like a momentum, you know. Maybe they feel like they want to be more in touch with their fusion of culture, so they blazer, or maybe they feel like they want to represent their culture in a more everyday setting. So I want it to be more of like an investment of a piece versus something like a fast fashion where, you know, everything is like, you know, affordable, like a Shein or a Zara, and you just add stuff in your cart. You know, I want a piece to kind of bring memories to you. So you wore this in an event, you know, and like, I think that's what our generation does wrong. I mean, I also fell for this, you know, like we buy all these clothes because we feel like clothes are just something we put on our body, but really clothes, what we wear is a means of expression and identification. And I feel like I want to kind of move that mindset as much as I can to my consumers. And
yeah. Totally. I mean, yeah. I definitely think that that's something, that's one area that I've really evolved in as I've gotten older, is just really trying to be more intentional and mindful about what I'm buying. It's not just clothing, but really anything that I'm bringing into my house, but especially clothing. I mean, it also helps because now I'm older, so I actually have money to spend on, you know, invest into nicer pieces that'll actually last me a long time and that are sourced from good places, that are ethically made, that have a story and, you know, memory behind it. What does, if you could kind of paint us like a high level of overview of all the events or series of events that have to happen for you to get a design out there, whether that's a design that's going to be used for a show or for people to purchase, like when you have an idea, you know, for a design, what's the first thing that you do? And then what's the sequence of events after that?
Yeah. Okay. So I think that what I try to do is like, I have this app on my iPad that like you can sketch like the fashion sketches and stuff. When I draw, it really decompresses me from the day. So what I like to do and strive for as a routine is right before I go to bed, I like to like put some Netflix on, have my iPad out and try to like design at least two different outfits. So for New York Fashion Week in February, I've been starting to sketch like at least two outfits, try to do that each day since October. So by December, mid after this weekend, I'm going to be, you know, laying out all the outfits and then choosing eight of them that I feel like is the most unique to me or I can kind of make in the next month. So that's how I kind of do it.
And like, so once you have decided, okay, these are the sketches or the designs that I'm going to go with, do you send that off to your manufacturer with the measurements and all of that?
Yeah. So I send them out to my manufacturer. I send them out. And then I also get to choose like the fabric that I want to use for them. So they have like a catalog of fabrics. So I'll sit there like, and that will take like at least 2 days to kind of go through all the fabric that they have. And a big thing for me too is like, I want to be very sustainable with my clothing. And a way that I do that is I use the fabric that's left over from their store. That's my first priority, is to kind of make sure that we're using fabric that has been overbooked somehow from one of their orders or my orders. I want to get that fabric out before I purchase any new product, a fabric. I think that way is one step for me to also be sustainable in a way where we're not over bulking on fabric and just like wasting it. So being able to kind of create, even with new styles, with different old fabric, I think is the best way to be sustainable, and at least in my capability right now. So that's something I'd first do, is making sure to address any fabric that we have at the store that can be used for our outfit.
Mm-hmm. Are your designs available for purchase right now by consumers? Like if someone saw your collection and wanted to purchase something, can they do that now?
Yeah, 100%. So right now we have two collections out. So that's all available for consumers to buy. We are made to order, but it takes around 2 or 3 weeks for it to kind of get back to our consumers.
Got it. Okay, cool. Let's talk about South Asian New York Fashion Week, because that's actually how I had discovered you, was because of South Asian New York Fashion Week and all the attention that it was getting a couple months ago online. So did you like officially launch your collection at South Asian New York Fashion Week, or had you launched before?
Yeah, I launched in August. I think it was like the 5th. I launched then I applied via South Asian New York Fashion Week mid-August. And then I found out mid-August, and then the show was like September 10th, I think, or 11th. And I had to like literally make a whole new collection within a month. So it was definitely a scary, but very learning experience. So it was, it was so magical. And that just kind of reiterated to myself that this is like something I really want to do.
That's amazing. So, okay, for just background for listeners, South Asian New York Fashion Week, from what I understand, it's like, it's officially part of the umbrella of the New York Fashion Week, correct?
Yeah.
So it's highlighting, obviously it's highlighting South Asian designers and designs. And for them to kind of be an offshoot of the New York Fashion Week is a really big deal. Yeah. And so that's a huge, you know, accomplishment, and hats off to the founders and the people behind the scenes. Yeah. I had been following Shipra, the founder of it, for some time. So I know a little bit of the backstory, but it's been like years and years in the making. So that's really awesome that they were able to get that, you know, off the ground this year.
Definitely much, like, it's been too long. I feel like I'm so proud of them. I feel like they took that first step to kind of break that barrier for South Asians. So it was amazing.
Yeah. So there was a lot of positive feedback, but there was also a lot of criticism, just like negative feedback that I think was circulating. A lot of people sharing through TikTok and all these other platforms about the lack of diversity and inclusion in South Asian New York Fashion Week. And, you know, some people just like not having had positive experiences interacting with the team, whether it was like as a model or whatever. And I know in one of the videos, how I came across your name was because I remember you kept getting tagged as someone who, like, the person who had posted the TikTok was basically like, if it wasn't for Renee, I would have had like such a bad experience, and they were so grateful for you. And so I think from what I can recall, there was a lot of critique around the lack of diversity in terms of body types and body sizes and identities that were represented, despite that being one of the main elements that were being promoted about South Asian New York Fashion Week. Like, hey, you know, this is going to be different because we are going to be putting diversity and inclusion at the forefront. And like, people who were critiquing the whole event were saying that didn't actually happen. I'm just kind of going off of what I was able to put together and piece together from what I had learned on the internet. But what was your take on that? Like, what was your kind of take and experience with South Asian New York Fashion Week?
Yeah, well, I think overall, I had such an amazing time there. I feel like, again, Shipra and Haikel kind of provided such a beautiful platform for South Asians, the community. And I think that with everything, whenever you do something for the first time, I'm sure it can be very difficult, you know, kind of putting together this kind of foundation and this kind of company to bring together some amazing designers, you know, all across the globe. So I think everything will always have criticism, but I do want to say that I felt like from the beginning, though, when I was working with them, I felt like they were very strong about being diverse and inclusive. And I really felt that way. For example, like when we first got the model sheet, they like kind of picked and chose 200 or 100 models. And I remember being so happy because I felt like every model there was different from each other. I felt like they did a good job at being, having models of different shapes, sizes, colors, experience, no experience, even non-South Asian models too. So I was very happy. And the idea was to kind of be able to choose the models from that list and kind of proceed with them. But I think what happened was, maybe they worked with a PR company that kind of didn't kind of align with what they kind of wanted. And it kind of backlashed with a lot of the negative criticism they had. So I truly believe that like Shipra and Haythel kind of had the right intentions. And I felt like I saw that with the model catalog, but maybe the company they worked with kind of didn't get that memo and kind of took a really bad, kind of took a bad step in kind of organizing that model call and like, maybe making people felt left out. So, and I feel like that was a very unfortunate circumstance to happen for Haythel and Shipra, because I don't think that it was any of their wrongdoing, but I think it was the people that they were working with kind of took that and kind of made it hard for everyone else.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think the fashion and modeling industry in general there's a lot of work that needs to be done, right? It's still pretty like exclusive. It's still a pretty exclusive environment. And I think in order for there to be true representation in the fashion and modeling space, like it's like so much deeper than just finding the diverse models, right? It's making sure like, do you have hairstylists and makeup artists that know how to do their art for diverse types of people or people of color or, you know, whatever. When it comes to actual clothing, it's making sure that designers are actually making clothes for models who have diverse body types in the first place, right? Like if you don't have inclusive clothing, then you can't be inclusive with your model selection. So, I mean, there's just like so many things that it's just, I think it's just it's so much deeper than just finding like diverse models. But I think, I think their intentions were definitely like in the right place. And I'm excited to kind of see how they're going to evolve and how things are going to kind of improve in future years. How do you think they can improve for like next year in terms of diversity and inclusion and, you know, addressing some of the issues that people had been spotlighting?
Sure. Yeah. I think what was great that I loved that they both did was they kind of talked to all the designers after and like asked them the same kind of question. They were like, what can we do next year to kind of solve this or do better? And I think that is like the first step that, you know, any kind of founder can do to kind of like kind of address any issues like that. So I know like the biggest thing that I had for them was that we didn't figure out our models until 2 days prior to the show, which can be kind of difficult for designers to kind of, at that point, they're going to have to find models who fit their clothes, right? So like, for example, I somehow was able to, I first entered the call room and I was the first designers there. So whoever was there, I kind of like, they just came to me. But I know later on, like designers who already had the clothes made, but they didn't know who their models were. So they kind of had to figure out models who fit their clothes. Even though they wanted to be as inclusive as possible, they had no idea what to expect. So told them, like, the biggest thing for me would be like to give designers like a month or at least a couple of weeks in advance for them to kind of cater their outfit to the models, right? Because you can't tell the designers 2 days beforehand that you want them to be inclusive and diverse if they don't even know the model. Like they don't even know what the model. So that was one thing I told them, and I think they want to implement that. I know they have a D&I board, but I think that maybe having them more involved in the process, even when it comes to model kind of casting, making sure that they're there at those events to make sure no discrimination is happening there, I think is super important. I'm not a big fan of like people having to show pictures of what they look like or their body structure when they're applying to be a model, because I know this is a fact and I like will stand by this. I think everybody's so beautiful, and not even in their own way. I think everybody's beautiful. And I don't think that people have to justify how beautiful they are by a picture. I don't think anyone is to kind of call out this person is prettier, that person's not pretty, because that's just a lie. Everyone is beautiful. And I feel like having to have pictures, I think, in an application to me doesn't make sense. I think that modeling is an art form, but I think it's something that with the right training, I think people can learn. And I think that's something that South Asian New York Fashion Week should. And I think that's what RKJ does is like, for example, for New York Fashion Week, I randomly chose models and two of the models don't have any experience in modeling, but they're working with our experienced models to work on the walk. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have to apply with pictures. They're so beautiful. I can make my and cater my clothing to their size. And I think that's what fashion should be about. Fashion is all about inclusivity and feeling confident in what you're wearing with. So those are some of the things I kind of talked to them about and said that it working for me, and I feel like it would create more of a safe space if we kind of didn't include that. Sometimes people might feel like they don't fit the Eurocentric standards or the beauty standards that are in the trend right now. And like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Beauty is timeless, you know, and I don't want anyone to ever feel like they're not beautiful enough. Someone in the town hall was telling me that she felt like she was not beautiful enough, and that broke my heart because that's how disgusting our society can be. And that's how disgusting the South Asian community can be too, making us feel like we have to show kind of beauty that we aren't, or we're not beautiful because this is the standard. And it doesn't make any sense to me. We're literally all a God's creation, you know? And like, I think we fail to realize that sometimes.
Yeah. What does it mean for you to embrace inclusivity as a designer? And tell us about some of the things that you're doing as a designer to create more inclusive opportunities for people.
I think the first thing for me that I want to do is I want to be held accountable for like everything I do. And like, obviously there should be a healthy boundary, but I really want to be held accountable when it comes to diversity and inclusion. So for example, in the first town hall I had, we talked about how to be inclusive with my model calls. And another thing we talked about was makeup. And for example, makeup and like maybe with the models who don't feel comfortable with makeup, making sure that they know that they don't have to wear makeup and showing the imperfections of beauty. You know, like I love makeup. So that for me, I'd want to wear makeup no matter what. But maybe there's someone who feels like they don't feel confident in makeup. I would never want to force them to feel beautiful in a makeup perspective when they are beautiful. So I'm opening that boundaries to my models. So before they kind of do a model with me, I'll tell them like a week in advance, like, don't worry if you don't want to wear makeup. If you want to wear glasses too, like that's a very stigmatized thing. I love when people wear glasses. Body hair, I love it. If you feel confident in that, you know, like wear, you know, don't shave, you know, you don't have to shave. You don't have to take your glasses off. You don't have to wear makeup. I don't want any kind of like shapewear or restricted wear that like I don't require that. Like if you, I want it to be as natural you as possible. So that was, I think town halls kind of hold me accountable, making sure that I'm doing the right thing or what are some new ways to do so. For example, one of the members are saying like to reach out to more underrepresented communities in the South Asian community, like maybe with people who have skin conditions or maybe people who are in wheelchairs, or how do I kind of like grasp that and like be inclusive? So figuring out ways to do that. Another thing is with my model calls, like, again, I do a randomized selection of my models. So models who want to model for RKJ, they'll submit their name, like contact info, where they live, fun facts about themselves. And maybe like, I also ask them like, what is a stigmatized topic in the fashion space that you want to be changed? So I literally just do a random number generator and I find their name and then I ask them if they're available for this event. So I don't look at any of their physical requirements, their physical attributes, because like I said, I already know they're going to be beautiful. I already know that they can do their confidence, because it takes confidence to apply to a role like this. You know, like you don't have to walk a certain way, or if you're physically disabled to act a certain way to be down the runway. You have the confidence to apply to this. You're beautiful. So what's your availability? So I first ask them their availability, and if they're available, then that's when I ask their size, only for me to make the clothes suitable for them, for no other reason though. Yeah. So I did this for the shoot on Saturday, and I did this randomized thing, and all my models range from extra, extra small to extra, extra large. So I felt like this was the best way to be as inclusive as possible. And I think inclusivity comes from more than just size, or then it can also be, you know, the color of your skin. I think in the South Asian community, we have a lot of stigma when it comes to colorism. Mm-hmm. Also, in economic background. So having that kind of diversity, especially in the economic factor background, is something that I want to push forward to. So especially when models, maybe they're like, oh, I can't afford this, figuring out ways to kind of work together to make sure that they have this experience without having any financial restriction.
Yeah. So with these town halls that you hold, is that something that like anyone can call into, or how do you hold these town halls?
Yeah, so it happens every like 2 or 3 months, and they happen on Zoom. So on our stories, we'll post like topics that you want to kind of vote for to talk about. And then we will like maybe bring someone in who's more experienced about that, or we'll kind of have like a collaborative discussion. So yeah, they happen like every 2 or 3 months over a Zoom call, and this is open to the public. You have to sign up, and then we send you guys the links.
Got it. And then as far as the database that you mentioned, so just so that I understand, if people want to model for your collection, they can sign up to your database. There isn't any information requested during the sign up around sizing or what they look like or physical attributes or anything like that. Yeah. And then when you need models for an upcoming show, they're selected based on like a random generator. And then from there, that's when all the sizing and all of that is talked about, so that obviously you can create the clothes that will fit them. Is that kind of the gist of it?
Exactly. Clothes, I think, are meant to be made to fit us, not the other way around. I don't want to be making clothes and finding people to fit in me, because that's just not how life is. You know, we go to a store and we put on clothes that fit us, right? We should have that power, not the clothes to have a power on us. Because, you know, like I had someone apologize to me for gaining weight, and I was like, girl, like, that's our natural body. Like our body is living every day and fighting to be who we are. You know, we don't have to apologize for changes in our body. Like God knows what our body is put through each day. So like, even if there's a weight gain fluctuation, it's literally stitches. You can always change that. I think clothes should be adaptable and not specific to somebody's size. But I do want to say, like, when I first started RKJ, I was in New York and I posted in the Little Brown Diary group and I was like, hey, I need like 7 models who are able to unpaid and help me out for like a couple hours. And I had a ton of girls reach out to me, but 8 girls in particular who kind of like were the first to be like, hey, we want to help you and we want to help your brand. And I hold those girls very closely to my heart because they kind of took a chance on me and took their time to help me when they didn't even know who I was or the brand. I couldn't pay them nothing. And whenever I have an event, they're the first girls I ask. That group chat is the first girls I ask. For South Asian New York Fashion Week, I brought like almost all of them with me because, you know, like I said, they're the first people I'm going to ask. Like, hey, are you guys free? Because I will take them because they took that chance on me. And for New York Fashion Week, I asked them first too. I was like, hey, like you guys took a chance on me. Like I want to be able to support you if you want to be a model. So I'm going to be taking some of them as well to New York Fashion Week.
I love your philosophy and outlook as a designer. I think it's very unique and very refreshing. And, you know, I think that you're kind of laying the groundwork for other designers to follow suit. So,
no, thank you so much.
Yeah. What is the dream for you? Like, I know you mentioned you want to do this full time, but what do you kind of envision your dream life as?
Yeah, I think my dream life would be to have a boutique where we have clothes like for South Asians, non-South Asian, just people coming in, trying new clothes and making South Asian fashion like loved. I think this kind of ties back to our conversation before about like not feeling beautiful enough or like you said, like the guy maybe doesn't like us because we're Indian or, you know, I want it to be like people actually yearn for South Asian kind of brands or South Asian looks. I want it to be more accessible. I want it to be sustainable. And I want to create a company that makes people feel safe, you know, and makes people feel like they're loved and understood. And I feel like I never grew up with a brand like that.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's what I kind of strive for. And I obviously want to live a life where I'm comfortable, but I don't care as much like to be a millionaire. But if I can instill like some kind of passion for someone younger, like for example, like RKJ just hosted a model Q&A call this past week where I had 2 or 3 models that walked in RKJ. One who is an influencer model who does works with a lot of content and brand modeling. One who does a full-time model that works in the agency. One who's actually a college student who does model fashion shows. And the other model who does freelance modeling. So I actually held a panel for maybe other South Asian women or any younger women who don't know how to kind of get into modeling because it is a very stigmatized career or field. So kind of hosting that Q&A session for them to understand how to kind of get into that modeling business. So I want my brand to be a funnel for South Asian women who want to go into the entertainment, who want to go into the modeling industry, and they know they have a brand that will support them no matter what. So kind of paving that way to create more opportunities for South Asian women, especially. Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a story of like probably a lot of brown girls who grew up feeling like there's not enough space for me in some type of way. And now they're trying to create something that they felt they needed for themselves growing up.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, I just want them to know that like anything is possible. I haven't reached anywhere where I can say that, but I feel like high school Renee would never think that she would be so happy with being Indian and want to like wear jhumkas with the blaze. No, I would never do that. So I just, even that change, like if I can do that, maybe that one girl who came to the modeling call who like didn't know how to kind of start, maybe that call helped her kind of reach out to a brand and like, we talked about having those conversations with South Asian parents about wanting to do this full-time or part-time. And I wish that I had someone like that to kind of talk to when I'm having these conversations with my parents too. So just kind of creating a platform that is more than just clothing and really a resource for.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of families, what is the support from your family like in terms of the fashion and design work that you do? Like, do they get it, or are they kind of like how a lot of brown parents are, where they're like, oh, you're just doing this for fun, and they don't take it as seriously, you know?
No, my parents, since my childhood, have always been so supportive of me no matter what I do when it comes to creative. Both my parents are definitely in the creative aspect. So they're very supportive. I think their main concern is always stability. I think they want me to be stable when it comes to me mentally, me financially, me physically. I think that's their main concern. And I think they will support me no matter what. I think if they, I recently told them that this is like what I want to do full time. And I think, like, obviously their first question was like, you know, we're worried about financial aspects. Are you going to be okay? And I told them, you know, like, I will do whatever I can, you know, to make sure that I'm in a comfortable space. But they are very supportive. They're very supportive.
Yeah, so that's awesome. That's really great to hear. Yeah. What does your team consist of right now? Or is it like a one-woman show? You know, how do you kind of run this behind the scenes?
Oh, my God. No, I wish it was one-woman show, because I could not take credit for any of all the stuff that I get help with. So the first hire I did was a social media manager. So her name is Yasha. She's been amazing. And she always kind of gives me ideas of kind of what are some strategies to grasp the market. So connecting with my users. Do we do reels? Do we do what kind of sounds we use? She's been such a great help. I have a project manager who kind of handles all the event stuff that we do. And like, she'll help me with styling or like people who to contact. So for example, if individuals are looking for like outfits for events, she'll like help me connect with them and like reach out to them to have them wear the outfits. I have two finance interns who are literally a blessing from heaven. They just handle all my profit and revenue, telling me what to mark my clothes at, what to do the sale at. Renee, like, this website or this page has been getting more views. You should be marketing this more. So they've been amazing with that. I also have an HR manager who handles all things when it comes to the culture of our team. So making sure she's holding me accountable, making sure we have those mental health check-ins, making sure we're doing more team activities, making sure that we create a safe space for our team. I also use her help for the town hall events. So where we kind of pick and choose stigmatized topics in the South Asian community. So for example, the last one was diversity, inclusivity in the modeling. When it came to KJ, so brought about like 20 people from the public to have these conversations. So she helps me put those up. And then we also have a website manager that we just hired who is going to be revamping our website to make sure it kind of is concise and kind of up to our par for our brand. So yeah, it's definitely a team, like team thing. I think I would literally die if it was just me. So I feel so thankful. And like, they do this all under love and no money. So I think I'm so grateful for that. And like, I think if I ever started getting any kind of profit, like that was enough to sustain the company, my first thing would do is to pay them, because I feel like they do so much for me that I could never kind of thank enough. So
you really do have like a whole team and a whole, you know, a huge support system kind of. Cool. Do you have funding partners, or are you fully funding this yourself right now?
Right now, I'm fully funding it myself. And I think that kind of pushes me more to kind of like, I want to figure out a way to do this full time. But, you know, as I start, it's only been since August, I've been having to kind of fund everything myself. And it has been very hard, but I am hoping that it will be worth it one day, you know?
Yeah, it will be. I know when we had chatted in our pre-chat, you had mentioned you have had some investors approach you about partnering together for funding. Why did you decide at the time to not go pursue that?
Yeah. At the time when I got those requests, I think my first initial reaction was like, yes, 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 right? But I kind of sat down with another friend who does venture creation. I kind of talked numbers with her, and she kind of recommended that in the beginning of this, of my brand, at least a year or two, to kind of focus on the brand itself, focus on me as a brand, focus on my brand, making it, like building it to be what I actually wanted. I think when you add another player, even if that person is someone you work well with, or even if that person is amazing, right, you kind of sometimes lose control of how you kind of want to build that brand. So
yeah.
kind of, she kind of suggested to kind of take that next this year or two to kind of like really establish it and build something that I feel proud of, and then kind of open it up to people who want to invest in me. So I have to, I think my goal is to invest myself into my brand so I know that it's worth fighting for. And then when I feel like I have stability and trust with myself and my brand, then I kind of want to open in new people.
Yeah. Like you basically want a solid footing with the identity of your brand that's completely your own. I mean, as soon as other people and stakeholders get involved, it inherently creates these situations where you may have to sacrifice certain elements because of the fact that you have other.
Yeah. Yeah, because let's say I face a problem with them, with investor there, then I kind of have to take their consideration too to kind of mold a solution. And I feel like the best ideas right now for me is just to think of what will help my brand more without having to think of how will that help the investor too. So I think once I figure out my brand, super confident with my brand, then I'm able to kind of open that up.
And what is next for you? Like, are there any exciting things that you're planning for in 2023 that you can share with us? Sorry.
Sure. It's my dog. No, my dog too. Well, New York Fashion Week will be in February 11th or 12th. So I have to actually figure that out. So that'll be exciting. That'll be in New York. So bringing a fresh set of clothes. I feel like a lot of the other designers, very talented designers, but there's not many South Asian designers there. So that'll be cool. There's actually not really no other South Asian models too. So I wanted to bring my own models to kind of bring representation. I'll be launching a men's line too. So
that will be amazing.
Yeah, so that will be another place to showcase it. Also, RKJ is working on creating a South Asian fashion magazine. So we've been working with a team to kind of create content about fashion and lifestyle that I feel like we didn't have growing up. It was always more American, Western fashion. So creating that kind of magazine for South Asian fashion, and hopefully getting that launched February or March. So that's kind of what I have expected in the first couple of months of 2023.
Awesome. That's very cool. What if people are listening and they are interested in modeling for your line, like how can they get involved?
Yeah, of course. I would say like on our bio in our Instagram, there is like a model sign up form. So they can just go ahead and fill that out. And whenever an event comes up, I will like be going to that first too. After like the girls who helped me, that's like the second place I look at. And then I just randomly choose models. So I think we have over like 300 people who signed up. So it's a little bit harder now to like make sure everyone has opportunity. But to me, that's the most fair way. And I think I don't know how else I would kind of be able to be more fair at this moment.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Yeah, we'll definitely go ahead and link that in the show notes. And then last question, what kind of advice would you have for budding fashion designers or just maybe anyone who's in the creative space that's trying to figure things out and get their thing to the next level?
Yeah, I think like to me, I had those amazing mentors at Rhea Collective who really kind of pushed me. And like, we're always there for a conversation. So to anybody who is listening, who wants to go into fashion, I hope you know that I'm here for any of those kind of calls or conversations to kind of aid how to get, you know, how to start. But I think I would say like, just do it. Don't wait for something. Like, don't wait for someone's validation. Like, don't wait for that, because the only validation you need is you. And like, when you're starting a company, that first thing you need that if you don't have will fail is that confidence that you have in yourself. So say yes to yourself, take those risks, have deadlines, have goals, and say like, okay, maybe in 6 months, if I don't get this, let me reevaluate everything. But don't give up. Like, things are going to go really bad sometimes. Like, maybe you're not going to be able to get your outfits in a week, but what you got to think next step. What am I going to do? What am I going to do next? Mm-hmm. You're missing a piece. What's the next step? For example, in Austin Fashion Week, like I got measurements for one of my models and the pants like just didn't fit the day of. And I was like, what do we do? I'm not going to give up on her. I'm not going to give up on my outfit. So we went and got pants for her. Like, we got jeans and we made it a new whole Indo-Western look. Anything is possible, no matter what. You can't give up, because if you give up on yourself, then your brand is not going to go anywhere. So you have to be resilient. you have to believe in yourself and always take those risks, I think.
Ah, amazing. Thank you, Renee. Yeah. I think you were such a breath of fresh air, honestly. Tell people how they can find you or where they can find you. I know you mentioned Instagram, but plug your handle and your website and all of that.
Yeah. Okay. So our design Instagram handle is at @rkjdesigns_ and our website is rkjdesigns.com. So feel free to DM us.
Awesome. Thanks, Renee.
Oh my God. You're the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review. You can also connect with us on Instagram at @thebrowngirl_podcast and all other social media platforms listed in the show notes. Thank you again. I appreciate you being here.